Om Agnatam Nandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Sumilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sa Pandantikam Vanchakaupa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vaibhacha Pratitanam Bhavinebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. If you remember, in the last week, the previous chapter, chapter 27, was discussed. And in chapter 27, Devahuti, not at the very beginning, but in the middle of the chapter, after hearing about the combination of the soul with the fundamental principles of material nature, which originate from the Lord, but are the basic 25 elements of material nature. So after hearing how intricately the soul is interwoven, and how the consciousness of the living entity, all it practically sees is matter. So she asked, how is it possible? Is it possible that the material energy, these principles, will release the soul? How is it possible to extricate the soul? Or if the material is taken away, is there anything left, practically speaking? It's like if there's ingredients within a bucket, there's paint in the bucket, and the bucket, the paint is material, and you get rid of all the material, the bucket is empty. So is the consciousness of the living entity similarly empty when the matter is gotten rid of? So she asked these questions to Hasanka Pilamuni. Is it possible, since the soul and the material energy is such an incredible attraction, how can the soul get released? So Kapila Muni explained very strongly and very clearly that yes, it is possible, and the process of the soul's gaining release is through bhakti, through devotional service, and specifically and fundamentally, primarily by hearing and chanting about the Lord. Now this is the essence of bhakti, hearing and chanting about the Lord. Sometimes we think that that's not even devotional service. If we hear, we should go and do something. But this is actually the most wonderful doing. It's fully always engaged in hearing and chanting about Krishna. But because that is a very exalted stage, then we need so many other things to do. But that is like Thakur Haridas, all day long, just Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Not only all day long, all night long, practically 24 hours a day. And all the Goswamis, just all day long, chanting and hearing and writing and offering obeisances, Nidrahara Bahara Kadi Vijito, conquering, sleeping, eating, everything, just fully always immersed in the nectar of Govinda Ganamritai, the nectar of hearing about and the nectar of the service of Govinda, of Krishna, devotional service. So it is the most wonderful thing. So that is the essence of the process. Kapila Muni has already explained this prior. The first thing practically that he did when explaining his Sankhya philosophy was explain this essence of hearing and chanting about Krishna. So then, in the following chapter, in chapter 28, which we'll begin today, he's going to explain the yoga system, Sankhya yoga system, which is it seems to be a combination of Jnana yoga, Ashtanga yoga, the eight limb process of yoga, and bhakti. And ultimately, because it leads to bhakti, and it not only does it lead to bhakti, but its very essence, its potency, the process of hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, meditating on Krishna like that. So we can say that bhakti is the ultimate. So he's going to explain this yoga system, which has, it is basically on the beginning, or the methodology is very much like Ashtanga yoga, which we normally think of it as yoga, which means the eight limbed practices. So we'll discuss them a little bit. So in the first verse, because this is the process that he's going to explain of separating the soul from its entanglement in matter. And always keep in mind that the essence of the process is the hearing and the chanting, as he's already described. But he's now going to explain the execution, Kapila Dev's instructions on the execution of devotional service. So Sri Bhagavan Ovatsya, because Kapila Dev is Bhagavan. He's the Lord. Yogasya Laksharam Vakse. I will now speak to you the description of this yoga. Savi Jasya Nipatmaje. This is the authorized practice. Mano Yenaiva Vidina Prasanam Jati Satpatam. By which the mind becomes concentrated and one attains the joyful path of the Absolute Truth. So Prabhupada's translation is, my dear mother, because he's speaking to his mother, Devahuti. O daughter of the king, she's the daughter of King Swayambhuva Manu. Now I shall explain to you the system of yoga, the object of which is to concentrate the mind. This is actually the purpose of yoga. Yoga Chitta Vritti Nirodha. That's actually the first sloka of Patanjali's, or the second sloka of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, which means that the chitta vritti, or the consciousness, the purpose of yoga, yoga chitta vritti nirodha, is to quell or quiet or control or stop the flickering of the mind. That is actually the purpose of yoga. As Prabhupada was very fond of saying, that the purpose of yoga is not just health. They're not just health exercises, although they are very good for your health. But that is not the purpose of yoga. The purpose of yoga is this chitta vritti nirodha, to quell the mind, because what is the mind's purpose? As we have already heard, it's accepting something in the realm of matter according to its plans for enjoyment. I accept this, I want this. And we see when the mind becomes attached to something, it decides, it wants it. It's going to fulfill its need for happiness. When the mind becomes attached to something, it really holds on tightly. What are those dogs? The Rottweilers or something like that? Pit bulls or something like that? Yeah. It's like the mind. It holds on to something. It wants something. Even though it may have full experience that it's not going to, but it won't listen to anything. It wants, accepts it. And then on the other hand, it abhors something. Icha dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. It doesn't want something else. And it may be completely illogical. And in fact, the thing that it wants 1 minute, some little other thing happens. And the same thing that it wanted, it abhors 1 minute later with the same vehemence, the same determination. So to quell the mind, because as long as one is mind is flapping and running here and there, becoming attached and repulsed from sense objects, then one can't make any spiritual advancement. One has to bring the mind under control. Bandharatmatmanastasya yenatmayvatmanandita. For one who has conquered the mind, the mind is the greatest friend. But for one who has failed to do so, that same mind will be the greatest enemy. So by practicing this system, whose object is to concentrate the mind, but not only to concentrate the mind, to control the mind, to focus it ultimately on the Lord of Vaikuntha Lila, or Lord Krishna. By practicing this system, one can become joyful and progressively advance towards the path of the Absolute Truth. So ultimately, this is the purpose of the yoga system: to progress on the path of the Absolute Truth, to attain a full integration. Actually, in yoga, the goal is to integrate the mind and the body, and then the mind and the body with the Supreme. So if the impersonalists are practicing yoga, they'll say that the goal is to make it all one. Or if the Buddhists are practicing their type of meditation, they'll say it is to make it not one but zero. But actually, the purpose is to make it one, the mind and the body one, because right now the senses are pulling along the mind, and the intelligence and the soul. They're being pulled by the senses or the desire to enjoy, which is leading us to such suffering. Our desire to enjoy leads us to such suffering because it is based on the senses' desire or sense pleasure, sense gratification, sense enjoyment, the body, which is temporary and fleeting and not capable of really delivering happiness to the soul. It is definitely a lesser vehicle. It is not possible for the soul to become happy on the physical platform because it's composed of something, it's spiritual energy, far more subtle. So, to make the body and the mind one, yes, but in service, in service to the Supreme Soul, Paramatma. This has been explained just at the end of the chapter before this one, chapter 26, how the soul has to meditate upon the Super Soul, but not just meditate and think about him, but with the desire to render loving service. So when one understands that Krishna is the Super Soul, then everything is the most perfect. So that is the goal, to make progress in this. So in other words, yoga ends in bhakti yoga. Yoga really means bhakti yoga. So here, the yoga practices are going to be described, which are the Ashtanga yoga practices. Ashtanga yoga. Ashta means eight, and anga means limbs or parts. So what we commonly think of as yoga, or hatha yoga, is just one of the parts, one of the limbs of Ashtanga yoga, one of the eight, and that is called asana. So we hear about all these. So text two. So he's going to explain, Kapila Muni is going to explain. One should execute his prescribed duties. So these are the preliminary steps for the practicing, the preparation practically. One should execute his prescribed duties to the best of his ability and avoid performing duties not allotted to him. One should be satisfied with as much gain as he achieves by the grace of the Lord, and one should worship the lotus feet of the spiritual master. So, if one wants to make advancement, these three things have to be observed in all yogas. And we see that, and one of the conclusions of this chapter and these verses is really that which one attains by each of the different practices of Ashtanga yoga, the same result is achieved through bhakti yoga, but in a more direct and much easier fashion. Same result will be there. But yet one should execute his prescribed duties to the best of his ability. One shouldn't be whimsical. One should be fixed in his duty. This principle is very important for a peaceful society and a peaceful person and a peaceful family, etc. People have to know what their duties are and execute them to the best of his ability and regularly and properly and not be whimsical. That means we know what we have to do and we do it. And we don't, one day, I don't feel like it, so therefore I don't do it. Next day, oh, today I feel like doing it. My work, going to work, or my family duties, or this or that. So today I feel like I'll do it, tomorrow not. I don't like it anymore, so therefore I'll just do something else. I'll get rid of this family, I'll neglect my prescribed duties as husband, wife, this, that. I want to do something else. I think something else will bring me more pleasure. This is just whimsicalness. And to do things just because they're the correct thing to do, that they're the prescribed thing to do, is so out of fashion. It is so far from the way contemporary civilization is thinking. Because more people are thinking, either, there's an old saying, if it feels good, do it. So instead of, it, if it's your duty, do it. It is my duty, I will do it. Instead of that, what, just see the ocean of difference between it feels good, do it, and it is my duty, you know, do it. Because sometimes our duty doesn't feel good at the moment. That is actually what the Bhagavad Gita says about activities in the mode of goodness. Sometimes, like regulating the senses when we want something, it is like poison in the beginning, but it will be like nectar in the end. But on the other hand, certain things are in the mode of ignorance, such as giving up the right kind of thing, or if it feels so much of it feels good, do it type of things, they're like nectar in the beginning. But very quickly they turn to poison. Or is that passion? That's passion. And ignorant activities, so they are poisonous in the beginning and poisonous in the end. And people in the mode of ignorance think that there's pleasure in them. So we should perform one's duties and be satisfied with as much gain as he achieves by the grace of the Lord. According to one's duties, one does performs activities, and what comes, comes. And not be always thinking how to increase, how to get more, unsatisfied with whatever comes. Wanting more, envy, victims of the advertising. Buy this, get this. Just the opposite. And one should worship the lotus feet of a spiritual master. So that we don't, in contemporary civilization, there's nothing like that. Worshipping another to achieve the mercy of God. It is more rely on yourself and you are God, depend on no one. Things like that. Self-help is a lot more popular. But self-delusion is more the result. So these are the preliminary practices. And one should cease performing gramya dharma navrittischa, conventional religious practices, just fruitive activities just because it's supposed to be done. We shouldn't do that. But one should be attracted to those religious practices which lead to salvation. In other words, freedom from the material world. Everyone should become clear, if one wants to practice this, we should be fully clear what the purpose of the practices is. And it's to get out of the material world, not to enjoy the material world. And as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur has said, that if one decides or is determined, it was concluded that the material world is not for his enjoyment, or that he no longer will become happy in the material world by configurations of varying configurations of sense enjoyment. If one has reached that conclusion, he is taking the greatest step towards going back to Godhead, towards the spiritual world. Because it's a very big step, because naturally we want to enjoy in the material world. So this again is for the practice of this yoga. So those religious practices that bring us to material enjoyment, we should reject those, because that is not the purpose of either religion ultimately or our life. One should eat very frugally and should always remain secluded that he can achieve the highest perfection of life. Why should one remain secluded? Gramya Gatana Shunive. Mahaprabhu said, Gramya Varta Na Kaive, or something. That one shouldn't, because when, as soon as the example is given in the Bhagavatam, there was a there was one lady to see her, to consider marrying her. So the person came and she went to cook. She said, we'll have it cooked. But she didn't want him to know that she didn't have a servant. So she decided that, but she had to cook herself. But she didn't want him to know that they didn't have a servant. So she went to cook herself in the other room. She said, I'll just arrange it. And she went to cook herself. She was wearing bangles. And if there were several bangles on the hand, there would be the clicking and clunking of the bangles. So he would know that when you're rolling the chapatis or the puris, the bangles are clicking and jingling or whatever. So he would know that she was in the back just cooking. So what she did was take off the bangles so there was only one. Because if when there's one bangle, there is no colliding and jingling. So similarly, and no noise. So when there's any more than one person, one just can't stop. So therefore one should be secluded to avoid this gramyakata, this just, did you hear about this one? Did you hear about that? Did you know? No, really? I didn't know, but I heard about this one. So on and on and on and on, because the tendency to not talk Krishna Katha about Krishna is very strong. So these practices are very, one very serious, because if one wants to practice yoga, one has to be very, very strong and very serious, because it's very, very strict, this Ashtanga yoga, and very, very strong. But the same things are automatically done in bhakti in a much easier, simpler, and direct way. So the rule in bhakti is to not talk gramyakata, not to talk gossip, but just to always talk about Krishna, because we can't just stay alone. No one can do it, practically speaking. We can't stay secluded. We're social by nature. And even in the Yoga Sutras, it describes how yogis, even after being very realized, they become very despondent and depressed because they're alone. So very, very difficult, impossible practically in this age of Kali especially. So in text 4, because the Astanga means the eight limbs of yoga, so the first two are Yama and Niyama. Yam means the rules and regulations, or yam also means the moral injunctions, and the niyam are the fixed observances. So those are the first two limbs of Ashtanga Yoga, the first two practices. So those, there are five yams and five niyams, five moral observances and five fixed practices, and these are described. All of them are described the yam niyams, because one after another the astangas, the eight parts of the yoga practices, are going to be described. So in text 4, the five yamas and the five niyamas are described. So the first one is ahimsa, or non-violence. And in each one, if one practices these rules and regulations, very interestingly, there are certain returns, karmic returns one gets for practicing these. One shouldn't practice these, the rules and regulations, to get something material. But certain material opulences come to one who practices these, and we'll read those in the Yoga Sutras, because we need the promise of that we're going to get something. Even for yogis, they want something, so they practice the yama and niyamas. So here, they're one after another. Ahimsa satyam asteyam yavar arta parigrahat. So that means, these are the moral injunctions. First, ahimsa, non-violence. Because if one is cruel, killing animals, eating their flesh or something like that, or just killing when something, the tendency, if there's some bugs in the house or something, like, just kill them. What's the problem? Just kill it. Something's in my way, disturbing me, kill it. Whether it's bugs or animals or tigers or cats or other humans, just kill them. So this is quite immoral. One should practice non-violence and satyam, truthfulness. One should avoid thieving, asteyam. These are all moral, well, we could say sub-religious principles, but they are very important, because one's character becomes firm by these things. Yavad arta, just take as much as necessary. Don't hoard. Parigraha, yavad arta parigraha, just possess as much as necessary. And then brahmacharyam, celibacy, tapa, austerity, sucham, cleanliness, svadhyaya, means study. Study of the Vedic literatures, and Purusha Archanam, worship of the Supreme Lord, especially worship of the deity of the Supreme Lord. Archanam is the process of worshipping the Purusha, or the Supreme Person. So these are all very nice, actually, and automatically, even if one is a serious devotee, one will follow these. Let's see, read the what happens if one follows them from the Yoga Sutras. This is from the Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. There's four different parts. This is the, I think the sec from the second part, sadhana, pada, the sadhana. When one is non-violent in speech, thought, and action. So one is thoroughly in all three things, in speaking, not speak violently, think violently, or act violently. When one's non-violence is established, one's aggressive nature is given up completely. And others abandon hostility in one's presence. So one gets a certain potency that soon as if one is thoroughly nonviolent, that soon as someone is in his presence, that person also gives up his anger. An example of this is when Magrari the hunter, who was horrible, he got pleasure out of half killing the animals. When he was in the association of Narada Muni, he was first furious that Narada Muni had freed all the animals, but soon as he was in Narada Muni's presence, he couldn't become angry anymore. Satya is truthfulness. When the sadhaka is firmly established in satyam, the practice of truthfulness, what will happen? His words become so potent that whatever he says comes to realization. In Jyotish terminology, this is called Vaksiddhi. That whatever you say has so much potency, it comes true. That could get us in a lot of trouble. Unless we are actually very fixed. If you're honest and don't steal, what happens? Precious jewels come your way. It's much easier to do stickers or something like that. Right? If one practices full brahmacharya, what happens? Knowledge, vigor, valor, and energy flow to him. Celibacy. When one is greedy, one is free from greed, one just takes what's necessary. What was that one that was Artha? Excuse me? Yavad Artha Parigraha. So one is, when one is aparigraha, or doesn't, when he's fixed in only taking what he requires, knowledge of past and future lives unfolds. And one is, if one is sochang, one has full cleanliness of body and mind, then one, when one deals with others, one doesn't try or think of exploiting them at all, using them for their own pleasures. That's actually cleanliness. Then, when one's body is cleansed, the mind purified, and the senses controlled, joy comes to the person. And then, when one is content, santushta was one of the things said before, or contentment, self-satisfied with what comes easily, and benevolent of consciousness. One is not, what is the opposite of benevolence of consciousness? Huh?
Selfish.
Excuse me?
Selfish.
Selfish, yeah, I would think it's selfish. So one, when one is benevolent in consciousness, very giving, open in consciousness, comes supreme happiness. Especially when that giving and openness, if one is bhuriganantiye buridhalana, if one is giving transcendental knowledge benevolently, then one really gets the param gati, the supreme goal and the supreme happiness. In Svadhyaya, Ishtadeva Samprayoga, study of Shastra, leads one towards the realization of God. And Samsiddhi Ishwara Pranidhat, or the worship of the Lord and surrender to the Lord, it brings perfection in Samadhi. So that really tells the whole thing, that if one wants to become perfect in focusing his mind on Krishna, one has to fully surrender to him.
Is this the tapasya thing?
I can't remember. Anyone? Did you write it down? Scott?
No, you
mentioned. Huh? Ask me later, okay? I'll look it up again. So here's more how to practice. So that's the yam niyam. Then monam sat asana jaya. So one has to be silent. That means because if one's alone, then it's obvious you're going to be silent. But the purpose is, again, not to talk nonsense, so that one can concentrate on his spiritual advancement. Monam sad asana jaya. And one should practice the asanas, or the yogic postures. Jaya means when one has perfected an asana, it's called jaya, and Prabhupada translates that. Here translates it as jaya is controlling. When you have full control over that asana, it is called jaya. When you have perfected the practice of that. And then stidham. So that will make you very steady. So that's the third of the angas. So there's yam niyam asana. And then pranajaya. Maybe you could put the volume down a little. So pranayam, when one becomes perfect in the pranayam processes, or the controlling the breath, then this is very, 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 very technical, actually. The pranayam fully controls the mind, because the purpose of all this is to focus the mind in samadhi, or focus the mind on the Lord, and Kapila Muni will explain that. So after one has the yamas and the niyamas, the moral observances and the regulations down, then one does asanas. And asanas aren't just exercise. Of course, there's gross ways to practice them. There are more subtle ways as well. But the yogic postures, and there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them ultimately, but it is to make one fully conscious. It's to make the body healthy, but to remove all the ignorance or the lack of consciousness from the body, so that one becomes fully in control and can become conscious of his entire body. So it's an amazing process that may take many, many lifetimes. And then, and Prabhupada will explain it, through the pranayama, one moves the prana, or the life energy. One learns that will be explained a little later, the practice of this. To move the prana, the life energy, throughout the different chakras. It's very common nowadays in the New Age circles that people talk about chakra balancing and this and that. So people are aware of the chakras. But one thing the New Age type of people do, they take these ancient disciplines and ancient knowledges, and they make it contemporary, contemporize it, and very, very simple and cheap and very easy. And all you have to do is attend a seminar or something like that, and then you become an expert at doing it. But these things are actually very difficult. So the idea is that one becomes, through asana, one becomes fully healthy and fully conscious of his consciousness. Is practically can spread throughout his entire body. So much so that when you're doing an asana, if you're in the jaya, when you have it and it's perfect, then you can. Everything is in harmony. Your whole body and mind are in harmony with this asana. And by the breathing, you can move prana, or the life energy, into any part of the body. You have so much control of the prana, of the life energy. And you can remove in this way, because ignorance is unconsciousness. So you can remove all the tamagun from your body, basically, and the rajagun. You can adjust that through the asanas and pranayama, so that your body is fully in goodness. And then what will happen when the body is in goodness? So this is the purpose. Just imagine how subtle it is. You can become, through the asanas, you can become conscious of your whole body, and when there's one part of your body not exactly right, when there's some tamagun in it or rajagun in it, you move in energy, prana, and then it becomes situated in sattvagun, and everything is one. So when your whole body and mind become fully peaceful, and then one can ultimately focus one's mind upon Krishna. That's actually the goal of the whole thing. But such a process. So the next step of the process, control the breathing of the vital air, that's pranayama, that's the fourth of the eight. Then withdraw the senses from the sense objects, which is the fifth, and that's called pratyahara. When the mind is fully peaceful and under control, the mode of passion and the mode of ignorance are no longer influencing it because of one's advancement in the yogic process, then one can withdraw the mind and break his attachment to the objects of the senses. Because remember, this is what Devahuti was asking about, how to get the soul's release from the material elements. So this is what's being described through the process of yoga. So then, when the senses are withdrawn from the sense objects by the potency of the and purity of the mind, then the mind can concentrate upon the heart. So there are three different stages which are of the focusing of the mind. They're called dharan, which is more concentration, dhyan, which is meditation, and samadhi, which is this fixed focus of mind upon the Lord within the heart. So that's the goal. So those last three can only occur when the first five are done, completed, and one is expert in them. So that is what will be described here in text 6. Fixing the vital air in the mind in one of the six circles of vital air circulations within the body. Those are the six chakras. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Brahmarandra. I can't remember the names anymore. I used to know them. The heart chakra, the one in the solar plexus, and the Japanese for this one, I remember. It's called the Hara. The lower one, I think, the Manipurvak, I think that's a Sanskrit name for that one. And then this one is Vishuddha. And they also represent different locations on the Lord's universal form, different subtleties of energy. And this is Brahmaloka, Indraloka, like that. Very, very, very subtle and heavy business. Very, very, it's not for just, I go to my yoga class once a week and make spiritual advancement. You know, maybe the body will get healthier. And then do nonsense all the rest of the week. Just live one's ordinary life and think that one's a yogi of some sorts. No, this is very, very heavy, heavy practice. Taking many, many lives, actually. And not, it takes hundreds of thousands of years. So one should fix the vital air in the mind in one of the six circles of vital. So pranayama means the moving up of the prana. So moving it up gradually higher and more purity. So one should focus one's mind to the six circles of vital air circulation in the body, thus concentrating one's mind on the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The personality of Godhead is called samadhi or samadhan of the mind. So the Sanskrit in this is svadishnyam ekadeshe. That means that within the vital air circles, ekadesha, you fix your consciousness in one spot, manasa, with the mind, prana, the vital air, dharanam, fixing it. This is what these more subtle parts of the last three angas of Astanga Yoga do. And then concentrating one's mind, Vaikuntha-lila. Vaikuntha-lila means the pastimes of the Lord of Vaikuntha, of the spiritual world. Abhidhyanam, concentrating the mind on that, and samadhanam, samadhi. Thus, that is the samadhi, or the steady focus and perfection of the mind. So one Prabhupada explains in the purport, it is never mentioned that one should concentrate on the impersonal or void. It is clearly stated, Vaikuntha-lila, Lila means pastimes. Vaikuntha means the lord of the Vaikuntha planets, the lord of the spiritual world, the pastimes. Lila means specifically pastimes, activities. So that is the perfection. Unless the absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, has transcendental activities, where is the scope for thinking of his pastimes? It is through the processes of devotional service, chanting and hearing of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that one can achieve this concentration. As described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Lord appears and disappears according to his relationship with different devotees. So the hearing and chanting is so important. So by these, text 7, by these processes, or any other true process, one must control the contaminated, unbridled mind. This is the real, so much work done, so much practice for this purpose only, to control the mind, the contaminated, unbridled, uncontrollable practically, mind, which is always attracted by material enjoyment. So that's the purpose. And thus, when the mind is controlled, thus fix himself in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Somehow or another, we should focus our mind on Krishna. So Prabhupada explains in the purport, the essential point is that the mind, which is contaminated by material attraction, has to be bridled and concentrated on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It cannot be fixed on something void or impersonal. The real yogi is the devotee because his mind is always concentrated on the pastimes of Lord Krishna. Therefore, Krishna consciousness is the top of yoga systems. Indeed, Krishna himself explains this in the last verse of the 6th chapter, yoginam api sarvesham. That means of all yogis, sarvesham, all yoginam, of all yogis, madgatena antaratmanam, one who is focusing his mind on me, shradavan, with great faith, possessing great faith, bhajate, and worshipping me, yomam, same yuktata momata, he is the topmost yogi, in a class by himself. So that was a very quick overview. And then there's more detail that is described. After controlling one's mind in sitting postures, one should spread a seat in a secluded and sanctified place. So after one knows the process, one can do it, then one should begin. And one should sit there in an easy posture, keeping the body erect, and practice breath control, pranayama. The yogi should clear the passage of vital air by breathing in the following manner. First, he should inhale very deeply, because so much the breathing, one has to, the mind is, becomes unsteady by irregular breathing. So very much the breathing is very important for the control of the mind, especially in yoga. So one should inhale deeply, so one has to learn the difference, practices, and there's names, there's Parakumbhaka and Rechika. This is explained in the purport. And this is clearing the different nostrils. There's Pingala, Shushma, the different nostrils, and the different practices for moving the air and moving the prana and the force of life. And the prana increases and moves, and one learns how to control it. Very, very, very difficult. And the last paragraph of the purport to 9, Prabhupada explains, practicing the yoga system of exercise and breath control is very difficult for a person in this age. And therefore Lord Chaitanya recommended Kirtaniya Sadahari. What does that mean? You know?
Singing and dancing and stuff like that.
Yeah, singing and dancing and stuff like that. It's a loose translation, but that's something. That's what it is. Kirtana means singing, and Hari means the glories of Lord Hare Krishna, and Sada means always. So always chanting, always engage in kirtan. That is the recommendation. That always chant Hare Krishna. So then one should always chant the holy name of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. Because Krishna is the most suitable name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The name of Krishna and the Supreme Person Krishna are none different. Therefore, if one concentrates his mind on hearing and chanting Hare Krishna, the same result is achieved. That samadhi is achieved. The yogis, text 10, who practice such breathing exercises are very soon freed from all mental disturbances, just as gold, when put into fire and fanned with air, becomes free from all impurities. Prabhupada explains. This process of purifying the mind is also recommended by Lord Chaitanya. He says that one should chant Hare Krishna. He says further, Param Vijayate, all glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. All glories are given to the chanting of the holy names of Krishna, because as soon as one begins this process of chanting, the mind becomes purified. Cheto Darpanam Arjanam. By chanting the holy name of Krishna, one is cleansed of the dirt that accumulates in the mind. One can purify the mind either by the breathing process or by the chanting process, just as one can purify gold by putting it in a fire and fanning it with bellows. By practicing, text 11, the process of pranayama, one can eradicate the contamination of his physiological condition. One becomes purified. All contaminations, one becomes very powerful. And by concentrating the mind, one can become free from all sinful activities. By restraining the senses, one can free himself from material association. And by meditating on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one can become free from the three modes of material attachment. Prabhupada explains in the purport. Ultimately, one has to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead in order to be elevated to the transcendental position, where he is no longer affected by the three modes of material nature. It is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that one who engages himself in unalloyed devotional service at once becomes transcendental to the three modes of material nature and immediately realizes his identification with Brahman, Saganan, Samatityaitan, Brahmabhuyari Kaupate. For every item in the yoga system, there is a parallel activity in bhakti yoga. But the practice of bhakti yoga is easier for this age. What was introduced by Lord Chaitanya is not a new interpretation. Bhakti yoga is a feasible process that begins with chanting and hearing. Bhakti yoga and other yogas have as their ultimate goal the same personality of Godhead, but one is practical. One method is practical and the other methods are difficult. One has to purify his physiological condition by concentration and by restraint of the senses. Then he can fix his mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is called samadhi. And the last verse that we'll read today. When the mind is perfectly purified by this practice of yoga, one should concentrate on the tip of the nose with half-closed eyes and see the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So tomorrow we shall hear, if Krishna allows, the next verses which describe what one who is practicing this yoga should meditate upon, how one should meditate on the Lord in the heart. Okay, thank you very much. Anyone have any questions or comments? Yep.
Yeah, I think bhakti yoga is good because it's sociable. It's not like you're sitting in a mountain in the Himalayas with no one talks to it, very lonely.
Not only is it lonely, it's also quite cold, by the way. And there are tigers. Yeah, it's a lot more practical. Especially we don't live long.
And we're designed to be sociable, aren't we?
Yeah, most people. for better or for worse, we're sociable. Yeah. But all the points that the yoga practice gives, the practices to get a particular result, they're achieved in somewhat different ways in Krishna consciousness, in bhakti. But same results. Focus the mind on Krishna is the ultimate result. Someone else had a question? Yes?
It's the same one as before. I'm wondering what the tapasya.
You want to know what happens to you if you perform tapasya? Okay. If we perform tapasya, how about truthfulness? That one's easier to find. Whatever he says comes true. Cleanliness. Did I say what it was before? Oh, maybe. Here's one though. Samadhi Siddhi. You know what that means? The perfection of samadhi comes from Ishwara Pranadhanat, is from the Yoga Sutras. That if one surrenders to the Lord, then the perfection of samadhi comes. No, Purusha Arjanam. This was the parallel one in that. Yes, self-discipline, tapasya, burns away impurities and kindles the sparks of divinity. All asuddhi, all impurities, goes. Kayindriya siddhi, asuddhi chayat tapasa, all impurities are destroyed. Tapasya. Okay. So tomorrow we'll continue. We'll hear that this is the preliminary, the practices to bring us to the point of meditation on the Lord. So the what we will meditate on, the beauty of the Lord, will be described tomorrow. Tomorrow is Ekadasi, yes? Nirjal. Who will perform Nirjal? Who is planning on performing Nirjal? That means no water, but everything else you'll eat? Bhima Ekadasi. Pandava Nirjal, that's different, but same. Is it the same, Pandava Nirjal and Bhima Ekadasi? It was a dispensation given to Bhima, yes? One time a year at least, you perform it strictly. But you're allowed to breathe, so don't worry.
I was saying earlier, I'll say it's a whole deep breath for me.
Try it again. Maybe someone will laugh. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.